Chapter 1. The Problem. My quest for Corvo was started by accident one summer afternoon in 1925, in the company of Christopher Millard. We were sitting lazily in his little garden, talking of books that miss their just reward of praise and influence. I mentioned Wilder's Hand by Le Fanu, a masterpiece of plot, and the fantastic fables of Ambrose Bierce. After a pause, without commenting on my examples, Millard asked, "Have you read Hadrian the Seventh?" I confessed that I never had, and to my surprise he offered to lend me his copy. To my surprise, for my companion lent his book seldom and reluctantly. But knowing the range of his knowledge of out-of-the-way literature, I accepted without hesitating, and by doing so took the first step on a trail that led into very strange places. Millard comes into this story more than once, and a short digression regarding him will not be out of place. I am glad indeed to pay his memory the tribute of these words, for to me at that time, living in the country by preference, in London by profession, he was one of the compensations of town, as he must have been to many others. His queer character and odd way of living offered unending contradictions and problems for an intelligent observer. Nevertheless, I could rely on him to provide literary conversation and a glass of Valdepeñas at almost any hour of the day or night. Contrariety was perhaps his most consistent attribute. At Oxford he flouted the authorities in acts of noisy folly. In early manhood he became an enthusiastic Jacobite, ostentatiously laying his white rose at King Charles I's feet every year, and acknowledging Prince Rupert of Bavaria as his rightful sovereign. In later years he became an ardent socialist, wore flaming ties, and, to the astonishment of yokels, sang the red flag very loudly in quiet country inns. Yet despite his Oxford antics, he took a good degree. Despite his Jacobite feelings, he fought very loyally for King George, and his socialist views did not prevent him from incarnating most of the conservative virtues. His history was a sad one, though he never obtruded it. He had filled many posts with ability. Turn by turn he was schoolmaster, assistant editor of the Burlington Magazine, secretary to Robert Ross, record clerk in the War Office. Under the pen name of Stuart Mason he compiled a bibliography of the writings of Oscar Wilde, under his own a catalogue of the work of Lovett Fraser, and each remains a model of its kind. But what had been folly at Oxford became criminal misdemeanour in later life, and he felt the lash of the law. It was indeed his imprisonment that taught him socialism and sympathy with the working man. After the war he became a dealer, in a small way, in rare and unusual books, and by this means a small pension and a legacy of £100 a year which his friend Ross had left him, he lived. Nevertheless, he was, for such a man, painfully poor. He lived entirely alone, unless the tits he fed counted for company, in a small bungalow hidden behind a Victorian villa in Abercorn Place, reached by descending area steps and walking round the side of the house. His establishment consisted of a sitting room with bookshelves modelled on those of Aubrey Beardsley, in which he kept his stock.